Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
Everything sounds fine to me. I guess we know who's both growing up. But anyway, my first pick, and I'm not just going to say this is my first pick, but it's the first thing that I decided to search for on YouTube and watch, and that would be from the original Survivor Series, 1987, and that would be the five-star match between Team Moolah versus Team Sherry.
Hmm.
And I'm sure you guys will agree with me on how awesome this match was, because this match, I know people are going to think, oh, my God, Moolah and... it's probably sucked and it was horrible. No, this match was awesome. It was 20 minutes of awesome. You had three really good workers on the heel team in Sensational Sherry and the very, very underrated Glamour Girls, who, even though they were chubby and very unattractive, they were actually pretty damn good workers. And on the other side, you had the Jumping Bomb Angels. And the Jumping Bomb Angels probably, pound for pound, were the best workers on the whole pay-per-view that night.
I'll agree with that. Pound for pound, definitely.
I mean, those girls were so awesome. I mean, I was just, like, I've seen the match so many times, but I just, like, watched it again, and I'm, like, amazed on just their work rate and just how freaking awesome they were. And it's actually a good match. And even Moolah, I mean, people always say Moolah, how horrible Moolah was. And, yeah, let's be honest, she was wrestling when she was, like, 50, 60 years old and wasn't as young as she used to be. But she was actually, she's the face in this match, but she was actually a very adequate heel. I mean, she, most of her stuff looked good. I mean, there was a couple of, like, clotheslines that didn't look great. But, I mean, Moolah, I mean, she knew what she was doing. She knew how to work her gimmick and work, you know, herself. And then, you know, Sherry's always been awesome. And, you know, Velvet McIntyre, who's always been a nice piece of ass. And then you had Rockin' Robin with an awesome mullet. I mean, just the whole match was greatness.
This Jimmy might remind me of a female truck driver's convention.
And Jimmy Hart took one of the biggest bumps I ever seen him take.
Yeah.
Off the ring. I mean, it's just, I just love that match. I mean, it's just, to me, that's one of the matches that really stands out to me for some reason.
Yeah, this was an awesome match. First time I ever got to see the Jumping Bomb Angels. And really, for me, they made the match, so.
Yes. Craig?
I have no comment. I don't remember this match. I'm going to be honest with you.
See, I knew I should have texted you and demanded that you watch this match before the show.
Yeah, that was
awesome.
I'm sure there's going to be more that I can't remember or haven't seen in years, so.
Yeah.
You know.
And I'll go with another thing off of that same show. And this might be, I don't know what it actually, star rating it actually got, but this might be probably the closest to, if not the, you know, best match in the history of the Survivor Series. Very close to it, if not. And that is the 10-team elimination match, which was, I'm sure Couture can name off every team off the top of his head here, but this match was just freaking awesome. I mean,
Strikeforce, the Young Stallions, the Rougeaus, the Killer Bees, and the British Bulldogs beat the Hart Foundation, the Islanders, Demolition, Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zukov, and Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo in 37 minutes. And, the Killer Bees and the Young Stallions were the survivors.
Which is kind of odd because you probably would have to think they were probably the two least pushed teams. I mean, the Killer Bees were always awesome. They always had great matches, but they weren't, like, you know, super pushed. You know what I mean? And the Young Stallions, you know, they were just together for such a short time. I mean, but they, it was like they took, you know, the two best jobbers and put them together, and they actually, I thought they were a hell of a team. It's too bad the dumbasses couldn't get along with each other and, you know, pretty much blew their only push, except for Roman went to the Horsemen, but we knew how that ended. But, yeah, this man, I mean, just, you know, got the British Bulldogs, you got the Hart Foundation, you know, the Killer Bees, the Rougeaus. I mean, even Zukov and Nikolai, you know, held up there. You know, I mean, they weren't great, but they, you know, they did their part. I mean, that's just one of the best tag team elimination matches ever.
Yeah, one of my favorite tag teams at the time, the Islanders, they were fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, they were fucking fantastic.
It's really sad when you start naming off those names of those tag teams and to look back on how many tag teams there were in the WWF at that time and how many they have now and how much no one cares about tag team. Well, excuse me, how much Vince doesn't like tag team wrestling. There are some amazing teams. You just listed off some of my favorites.
Vince doesn't even care enough to strip the titles from a guy who got suspended. I tell you, all
right.
You know.
Yeah, that was probably Ed's fault.
It was not my fault. I did not smoke fake shit.
At one time or the other, like in the mid to late 80s, maybe early 90s, I'd say WWF probably had the best tag team division in the business. I mean, they just had all the best teams.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad now that, you know, I just miss, I know this is a little bit off topic, I just miss, like, teams coming in as a team. Like, if you saw a Hawk and Animal, like, in the same room, you would have, you know, just guessed that they're together. You know what I mean? Just tag team wrestling as that's what they do. They don't have very many singles matches. They're just tag team wrestlers. And I miss teams, you know, instead of taking, Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne and throwing them together. Okay, they're a tag team.
Yeah, even though they are very good, I think. So, but still, I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, okay, they have the Usos, but of course they're not pushing. They don't even make TV.
Mm-hmm.
They have the New Heart Foundation for a little while, but they never really gave them a push outside of when Brett wasn't there. And so if you really think about it, the last real tag team that they had was Miz and Morrison.
Yeah, pretty much.
I would say Jericho and Show, but then again, they weren't together for too long, but they were actually great. But yeah, for like
Miz
and
the Big Show.
The what?
Miz and the Big Show were a pretty awesome team.
They were awesome too, but they really weren't around for too long. Miz and Morrison, they were actually together for quite a while, so that's probably like the last, you know, tag team. And my third thing, and this is probably in the early years, probably one of the biggest moments, and it's probably one of the most important moments in the history of the WWE, and that was the debut of The Undertaker in the Million Dollar Man's team against Dusty Rhodes. And that's just Mark Callis went from being a tall, big, generic jobber type guy in WCW to being probably the most awesome gimmick in the history of pro wrestling.
Yeah, I'd say so. This match, it was Ted DiBiase, The Undertaker was a mystery man with Brother Love as his manager. I don't know how many people remember that. Honky Tonk and Rhythm and Blues, Honky Tonk Man and Poor Gray Valentine with that black hair. And
he was so awesome with that. I swear to God, that was like one of my favorite tag teams, those two dudes dancing around. I mean,
they beat Dusty Rhodes, Coco Beware, and the Heart Foundation in 13 minutes and 54 seconds. And the Undertaker, he was awesome in this match. He pinned he pinned Coco Beware with the tombstone. Then he pinned Dusty. Then he got counted out because he was beating the shit out of Dusty. And the best part of this match was at the end when they had like about 5 minutes with DiBiase against Bret Hart, which was just some awesome wrestling.
Yeah, it was great.
Definitely. You're up,
Drew. Your opinion, or do you not have memories of this one either?
No, I remember it. The one that I was thinking of, and there was the one where Taker beat Hogan for the title.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, 91?
Yeah.
91, and of course there was controversy, and so we had the one-time-only Tuesday in Texas, as I remember. But
yeah, thumbs up when they plan a pay-per-view, like, for the next week.
Yeah.
Hey, there was it was back in the Freeman, so it wasn't that big of a building, but it's when I remember, it was pretty it was pretty packed. It might have been sold out, but I don't know how it actually did pay-per-view wise. But going back to the match Craig was talking about, I'll never forget Well, what I'll never forget is the video package they showed after this match when little Hulkamaniacs were crying their eyes out because their hero Hulk Hogan was being killed by The Undertaker. I mean, it was almost like back on the Von Erich DVD where the girls are crying when Kevin gets jacked by Chris Adams. I mean, these little kids, they were on the verge of suicide, some of them.
And there was, Undertaker, quote-unquote, pile drove him on a chair. It was like one of the worst pile drivers on a chair you've ever seen. Not worse than it hurt the guy, but bad as in the came, no, didn't come anywhere close to the chair. So
Yeah. And then Hogan told it like he was really hurt, and Undertaker really thought he hurt him for like a long time.
Yeah, that's why Undertaker doesn't care much for Hogan.
Well, he's a worker.
And I remember it was like, okay, this was in Detroit, and I think it was like, maybe there was like a college football player that had just gotten his neck broken or paralyzed or something. I can't really remember. And, you know, when they got him in the ring, and when Hogan, they got the medical people in there, and he said, you know, the Hulkster went and visited that young man with the broken neck today. And that made sense. And, you know, I don't know, kind of weird. Somebody really hard and they're playing it up. But.
Ever tell you about the time that Brian, myself, and there was another guy there. His name was Chris Benoit. We got worked. We were standing. It was the Spring Stampede pay-per-view that they did in Tacoma. And Hogan, I think they did the Pillman spot where they Pillmanized his ankle.
He was in the four-way main event, I think.
Yes, exactly. And so he was absolutely fine. He didn't get hurt, but we were actually in the hotel parking lot. It was actually a covered garage, but we were on the roof. We were chatting with Chris Benoit and some other indie guys and just hanging out, and Hogan's bus pulled up, and he got out of the bus limping, and limped all the way into the hotel long after the match was over, and he was 100% perfectly fine. He worked.
Well, yeah.
Dies in a parking lot.
You gotta work it.
Crazy.
Well, I'm going to go ahead, and Craig hasn't said too much over the show. We'll let you pick your next thing.
Well, probably my favorite match from 2004, it was Team RKO versus Team DX. And Shawn Michaels was the last man out of the four or five, I can't remember exactly. But on Team RKO, there was four guys left and just Shawn. And they posted him. He gigged and just bled a gusher and proceeded to take out three other guys and was looking like the man. And then
was
Randy
this,
Orton.
Was this Team Austin or was it Team Bischoff?
Shoot, it might have been that. I just remembered it was DX was in the match and Randy Orton's crew was in there as well. I can't remember the participants.
Okay.
Way to do your homework before the show, Craig.
I was just remembering that match, thank you. I got some things there. I got more than three, I'll tell you that.
Okay, 2004, Randy Orton, Maven, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho beat Triple H, Gene Snitsky, Batista, and Edge.
No, that's not it.
Okay, let me see.
2005.
See, I think it might be.
Anyway,
maybe
this
2003.
Was awesome.
Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, Christian, Scott Steiner, and Mark Henry beat Shawn Michaels, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, and the Dudleys.
That might be it. But Shawn put on a clinic that night. Just was awesome. Babyface in peril, bleeding a gusher. And this was Orton was just in maybe a year, maybe two, and came in and hit Michaels with the RKO at the end for the win. just an awesome, awesome, awesome match.
This is the one where the Undertaker returned, like, right after the end of it.
That sounds familiar, but I'm honestly not 100%.
Okay.
Mind is a little fuzzy, you know.
What, he's smoking some pot? Smoking some weed and you're not sharing?
No. I'll leave that to you.
Well, good chair, why don't you go ahead and pick one?
Okay. I'll go with one of my favorites that was, and actually ended up being a hell of an angle, was 1988, the 10 tag team match with the Powers of Pain, the Rockers, the British Bulldogs, the Heart Foundation, and the Young Stallions defeated Demolition, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zukov and the Rougeaus and the Conquistadors in 42 minutes and 12 seconds. And I was seeing some of these eliminations. It says in about 5 minutes, Bret Hart pinned Raymond Rougeau, and they wanted to get the Rougeaus out of there, and they were going to keep the Bulldogs in until the end because, you know, they had that big brouhaha in the locker room a few weeks earlier. And this was the Bulldogs' last night in the company. So they wanted to get the they didn't know what the Bulldogs were going to do, so they wanted to get the Rougeaus out of there and out of town as fast as they can. So they kept the Bulldogs in for like about 30 more minutes. You guys remember that?
Yeah. The real question for that match is, who were the Conquistadors in this match?
I think Jose Luis Rivera and maybe Jerry Estrada.
So it was the dads of those four Ricos.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. I never thought of that.
Really? They were a decent little tag team. I mean, they were good enough to go out there and have a good, decent match.
Oh, yeah, the dads were better than the sons. I mean, the dads were way better than the sons, and the sons weren't half bad, you know.
Although Edge and Christian were better Conquistadors, I thought.
Yeah, they were the greatest Conquistador team ever. I mean, that was so awful when they did that shit.
Anyway, the big thing in this match was it gets down to like the Powers of Pain and against Demolition and the Conquistadors, and all of a sudden Fuji's jumps on the ring apron, starts waving his cane around, and then he opens the ropes and Axe falls out to the floor, or Smash falls out to the floor and gets counted out, and that's the team he's managing, which made no sense why he was up there. So then they have the big argument at ringside, and he hits Axe in the back with a cane, and then Smash comes up and grabs him from behind and throws him right into Axe, and he body slams him on the floor. And so Mr. Fuji just laid there like a heap of sushi that's on the floor. And so then the Powers of Pain come over, and they help the man up. I said, well, this is weird. And so now he's all of a sudden he's in the Powers of Pain corner. And so in the end, it ended up with Fuji tripping one of the Conquistadors, and the Powers of Pain got the win, and Mr. Fuji was their new manager. So they did a double turn in that one match, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, and it's probably the best match that Warlord could ever say he was in. Well, I guess they might have wrestled with the Rockers a few times, but I mean, what a team. I mean, the Barbarian is always so awesome, and then you have the Warlord who just suck so bad. I mean, one of the biggest dudes, and I mean, he was like so huge, and I mean, but my God, he had like a negative charisma or something. I mean, Jesus Christ, he sucks so bad. How could someone so big and intimidating be so horrible? I mean, you know, position sucked, but at least he came off like he'd kill somebody and had charisma. I mean, the Warlord, just fucking black hole. It was horrible. And the Barbarian, one of the most underrated big men ever. I mean, he was all, I've always been a fan of the Barbarian.
Me too.
He was always a badass.
I just remember when they came to the WWF, it left Jim Crockett Promotions, and they left because they had signed them up for like the Great American Bash and Skywalker's matches with the Road Warriors. I said the Warlord is going to fall off a fucking scaffold. No.
You know who got screwed in that whole situation is they split. So then they needed opponents for these skyscraper matches. So what they did is they had they brought in the masked Russian team, who happened to be Jack Victory and the Angel of Death.
Yeah.
And those poor bastards had to take turns falling off the scaffold every night.
And I think Angel of Death was bigger than both of the Powers of Pain.
No, he wasn't bigger than him. He was a big Jack
Victory,
but he was not bigger than the Powers of Pain.
Yes, he was. I remember more stuff than you, so I'm right.
No, you're wrong. and then Demolition, I mean, I always hated them. Like, I guess during the time, I hated them because they were, of course, to me, you know, I grew up with the Road Warriors. To me, they were always knockoffs. You know, and that, not until, like, later on, years later, when you go back and watch matches and you see how actually awesome they were. But, I mean, you know, they really were two awesome dudes. I mean, you know, most people just remember Axe, but, you know, a lot of people my age remember the Masked Superstar, who was, like, at one time, was one of the very, very top heels when he was in Georgia feuding with Tommy Rich.
And, yeah, I mean, I like Demolition better because, I mean, you compare him to the Road Warriors. It's hard, so hard for me to get into the Road Warriors when they were, like, in a big feud because they ain't never going to lose. He never did jobs or anything like that, so I mean, at least Demolition could do jobs and stuff like that. That's why I liked them more as a team, and they were better workers. So,
yeah, that's true. Very true. Let's go. 1995. The main event on that show was Diesel versus Bret Hart. No disqualification for the championship.
This match is awesome.
This was one of Diesel's / Kevin Nash's best matches ever, and it's got to be Bret Hart's fault. this was right in the middle of the Attitude Era, or actually right at the beginning of the Attitude Era. The first time we ever saw a table spot, probably in WWF at the time.
Yeah.
Diesel lost the title and powerbombed Bret through the announce table, and it just looked awesome.
No, he didn't powerbomb us. Like, we just knocked him off the ring apron.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Remember, Bret was up. He was trying to get back in the ring, and I guess they thought that Diesel was going to bring him back in, but Diesel just, like, grabbed the ropes and pulled the ropes in and shot him backwards, and then went through the announce table. That was awesome.
Yeah. And just looked awesome. I mean, this was before the time where, you know, nowadays they pulled the pretty monitors off and all that. And, you know, it was just an awesome spot, like I said.
I'm guessing this was, what, a year after the San Antonio Survivor Series?
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
right after that San Antonio Survivor Series, Diesel had beaten Bob Backlund in, like, 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I was actually at that Survivor Series, the one here in San Antonio, and I'll never forget getting to see Chuck Norris kick Jeff Jarrett in the
face
during the one match, and that's the match that had the flag match kind of between Bret Hart and Bob Backlund, and that's where Owen
was bleeding
and begging and crying for his parents to throw in the towel because his brother was being killed so bad. And
I don't need to see again is I don't need to see like an 8-minute chicken wing by Bob Backlund on Bret Hart. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. the 4-on-4 Survivor Series match for this year, the 95 year, was Michaels, Ahmed Johnson, British Bulldog, and Sid versus Yokozuna, Owen Hart, Razor Ramon, and Dean Douglas.
The wild card match.
Yeah.
It was a decent match. I just remember, you know, they played this up. You know, Shawn Michaels had come back from when he got his ass kicked by the service,
yep,
or the guy, the Marines or something, and they were playing up him still having a concussion. And I just remember it was a good match. And I just remember the next night when he collapsed on TV, I said, "Oh
yep,
shit, what the fuck's going on?"
Yep, that was the night my daughter actually prayed for Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I remember they also got some good camera shots of girls in the audience crying like crazy, too.
I had never really seen anything like that before, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, Vince and Lawler kind of breaking character and stuff like that is funny. I thought it was real, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, the match was pretty good. I remember Shane Douglas, he just didn't work in WWF.
No, he did not work in WWF.
He had a stupid gimmick, but I don't think he gave it enough time. I mean, what was he out of there in like 3 months or something like that? I mean, some guys get stupid gimmicks and they evolve over
worst,
a few years.
He's his own worst enemy because, what? Him and John Hayes, if they would have tried, if they would have looked like that, they would have learned how to ride a skateboard for like 10 feet to the ring or, actually, they might have got over. And if he would have put his heart into Dean Douglas, maybe he could
have
got over. But, he has to be a hard ass and not get in. If things are stupid and not get into them, then just kill yourself right there. I mean, if you really try, you can get something over. I mean, Dusty Rhodes got fucking polka dots over. You know what I mean?
I mean,
you can get yourself over if you want.
Just look at how goofy Triple H looked in the beginning with the whole Greenwich snob thing. It's just kind of like a prissy guy. But over a few years, it eventually evolved, and he became one of their biggest stars. Sometimes I don't think he gave the gimmick much of a chance. I mean, that's what the gimmicks do sometimes when they get over. They just got to evolve over an amount of time, But when you only give it 3 months, and I don't see you just got no patience to let something play out.
Yeah. But I wanted to go back to
stupid with that exclamation point on his singlet. Let's be honest.
Yeah, he did have a shitty costume. But I wanted to talk about being at the Survivor Series Live. One of the highlights of this show, to me and no one else, because no one else would know about this, was actually the three people sitting behind me. Sitting behind me happened to be this one older trailer park trash white lady who was blind with her eyes open, both of them going in different directions. One of the guys was actually kind of normal looking, but typical white trailer park trash. And then the other guy was a total hillbilly motherfucker sitting, all together right behind us. And it was so fucking hilarious throughout the whole show because, when Jerry Lawler came out, these guys started screaming, "Get him, Jerry!" And then they would start telling everybody around them, That's talking to him. He knows what we're saying. He understands what we're saying. And then during the matches, they were like, "Oh, come on. I got $10 on this match. You got to fight back, Brett. You got to fight back." They were just the most entertaining fucking inbred hillbillies I've ever seen in my life. It was awesome.
You were in Texas. There should be no surprise.
That's very true.
Well, I've never seen fans like them again. But I'll tell you what,
I totally off topic. Last night I watched this program, Swamp People. Have you seen this?
No.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
What's it on? Discovery or something?
History Channel, I think. This is an amazing show. They follow these four families. And they all live in Florida. They're alligator hunters. And last night they had a special called Swampsgiving. And they showed these four families going out and catching Thanksgiving dinner. And it's an amazing show. I've never been so glued. But these two brothers, long white hair, beards. I mean, if you look up Hillbilly Dictionary, there's these two dudes are there. They were out hunting squirrels for Thanksgiving dinner. But they had to settle for rabbits. And then as they were heading home, they ran into a friend of theirs, and they traded one of the rabbits for two turtles. And they had rabbit and turtle for Thanksgiving. It was an amazing, amazing show. So
was
check
it called
it out.
Swampsgiving?
Swampsgiving, yes. It's, I can't even describe it. It was just amazing.
I'm just looking at this lineup here. This lineup here on the history. There's a show called Hairy Bikers.
Hmm. Anyway.
Something about killing boards or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, oh, getting back
to
that
next time it's on. So.
Yeah, it's right up your alley, Cotrera, I'll be honest with you.
Go hunting for raccoons and squirrels?
No,
and
no, things? No. Just if you know, you like the you know, the fish and show and stuff like that. This one's one's right up there. Yeah, not saying you're
here. Have you ever talked about a fishing show? You're being stereotypical.
Yeah, my bad. I'm moving right along. How about Survivor Series 98? And they had the Deadly Game Tournament.
Yeah.
Remember this one?
I remember the, you know, they got me at the end because I wasn't figuring on The Rock doing the big swerve. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, this had, Mankind,
this had the pay-per-view debut of the one and only, the awesome Dwayne Gill.
Dwayne Gill, that's correct.
I just remember the fans were chanting, when they were doing the mystery guy thing, they were chanting HBK, and Dwayne Gill came out.
Yeah, Dwayne Gill.
I just think he kept the promo about a Hall of, like, did he say, like, a Hall of Famer? I forgot what he said, but he, like, really played him up. And then Dwayne Gill came out. I mean, that's the WWE equivalent of the fucking Mookie Brooks.
Right.
This was the one instance that I actually liked when they redid the Montreal thing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just so perfect. You know, Rock sets Mankind up for the sharpshooter. He glances at Vince, does the eyebrow, puts him in the sharpshooter, and Vince calls for the bell. I thought that was pretty awesome. Plus, the match was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The main event was Rock and defeating Mankind in 17 minutes and 10 seconds.
And
all the matches, like, you know, told a story. I mean, if you really look at it, like, you know, they tied Mr. Sacco to head, you know, to make sure Foley was pissed off and kicked his friend's ass. And then you had Shamrock kind of, you know, the liberty to get himself disqualified against The Rock. You know, I mean, it was just...
It was supposed to be The Rock and Triple H.
Like no more.
But Triple H, you know, his knee was still hurt, so they threw the Big Boss Man in, who had already been beaten, like, in the tournament before, and he just ran in and Rock cradled him up in 1-2-3 in, like, 3 seconds.
Yeah, the total time was 4 seconds on that match.
This was one of those instances where, you know, Rock was had really gotten over as a babyface at this point for, like, the previous couple of months. I mean, he was just, you know, from where he was, like, the year before, Rocky Maivia, to where he was now, like, it was, like, an incredible transformation to how people hated him back then and how they were really wanting to love the guy now. And then he turns at the end of the match. It's like, you son of a bitch. You motherfucker.
Do you guys remember the first moment where they actually started to cheer The Rock? And that was in the ladder match against Triple H.
Yeah. SummerSlam? Was that a SummerSlam?
Yeah, SummerSlam 98.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hated him throughout the match, and then when I guess it was the people's elbow, he was doing something, and the place just went crazy, and it was the very, very first time that they popped, and then they slowly he started being like the cool heel. So that's when they made him face.
No, I think The Rock and I think maybe The Miz had two, like, the best transformations into, like, you know, just lower card guys or guys that people hated, and then, you know, going to be like champion and stuff like that.
This was the Survivor Series where, remember when they used to use Sunday Night Heat as their go in show or their pre show.
Yeah, you got 4 hours of rest.
Yeah, listen to the lineup to get you to buy the show. Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor defeated the Hardy Boys. Bob Holly and Scorpio defeated Animal and Draws. Val Venus defeated Tiger Ali Singh. And in the main event of Sunday Night Heat, Gangrel defeated Steve Blackman.
Hmm. I remember the thing with Bob Holly and Scorpio, they're doing the Job Squad gimmick.
Yeah.
Remember that? And
yeah.
So and this had to be a Vince Russo idea right here. And they were supposed to lose the match, but they would put a guy in a small package and not let him out, so the referee had to count three and they'd win so that he wouldn't lose or something. It was something, some kind of stupid Vince Russo bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, but it did produce the transformation of Dwayne Gill into Gilbert.
Gilbert,
and
okay.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah,
I'll never forget the first time he came out. I was, because I marked out when Dwayne Gill came out. So when Gilbert came out, oh my God, I lost my freaking mind.
Only
I
time
mean,
I
that
walked
was
out
so
with Gilbert
awesome.
Was when Goldberg.
Finally
when
he got burned, he got burned by the spark. Oh man.
Yeah, we had a guy up in Vancouver. He did the same gimmick, the one Royal Rumble where Gilbert actually he ran out there and got tossed immediately. We had to do the same thing the week after, but with Edberg, who later became Sex Ed. But anyway,
that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to pick a match now. If y'all are finished.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go back to 1988. In the main event, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, and Hercules, and Coco Beware, and Hillbilly Jim in the main event. Something wrong there. Beat Ted DiBiase, the Big Boss Man, Akeem Haku, and the Red Rooster, making his pay-per-view debut. And beat them in about 30 minutes.
I
like this match because this was a great match of telling a story because It got down to Big Boss Man and Akeem against and Haku against Hogan and Savage, and then you know they were having the big feud with the Boss Man and Hogan at the time, and so Boss Man got counted out and Akeem got DQ'd because they were both beating the shit out of Hogan on the outside, and then they handcuffed him to the bottom rope, and so Savage is left in there all by his lonesome and he's just getting killed by Haku, and then Hogan finally gets back up, and Slick's sitting there baiting him with the keys to the handcuffs. And so finally he clotheslines Slick, and then Elizabeth goes in to pickpocket Slick to get the keys back, which was it was pretty funny at the time. And so she unlocks Hogan, and Hogan goes in there, you know, does the big baby face comeback, the big boot and leg drop in 1-2-3. And then this was another one of those pieces of the puzzle leading up to next year's WrestleMania, you know, when Savage is there, he just has been beat to shit. His mouth is busted open, and Hogan's got Elizabeth in his arms, and he just was celebrating, and you can see just this fucking angry look on Savage's face, and he's seeing Savage when he's angry. You know, you know the kind of look I'm talking about. He's just staring at him.
Well, he probably did. Just saying.
But yeah, that was just like I still think that whole Savage and Hogan thing was one of the best storylines of all time.
Absolutely. This is one of the Survivor Series where they didn't actually have any singles matches. They were all the 4-5-on-5 matches. And
I like the concept. You know, the whole original concept for Survivor Series. Cause those,
yeah, I do too.
When you get those elimination matches, you generally get pretty good matches.
Mm-hmm. The tag team Survivor Series match went 42 minutes on this show.
Yeah.
Well, back then, you had great matches. When they did the Survivor Series this Sunday, it's probably only going to go 8 minutes to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. But I want to actually talk about my favorite team, and I don't even remember the match too well. But just my favorite Survivor Series team in appearance would have to be the team of the Road Warriors, the Modern Day Warrior Terry Von Erich, and the Ultimate Warrior. What? There has never been a cooler Survivor Series team than that team right there.
Yeah, I'll admit that.
I mean, I marked out.
There's been more steroided guys filled with steroids on a Survivor Series. Not only steroids, but only the only Survivor Series team with 7 feet.
Yeah, that's very true.
But yeah, that was awesome. It wasn't the greatest run in the WWE, but I did enjoy a lot of Kerry Von Erich's stuff, like the Survivor Series, or when he beat Kenning, and when I got to see him and Ric Flair lock up for the very last time in the Royal Rumble. I mean, I still have some fond memories of that.
Yeah, I like when I think it was SummerSlam where he won the IC title because Beefcake got his face destroyed in that accident, so he came in and that was an awesome win. So pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Every
time Beefcake was gonna get a title, he had to hurt himself somehow.
Yeah, the year before it was like Ron Bass or something when he cut up Miss Betsy with the shears, his bullwhip, and then they tagged him from behind with Brett and Bart, the Maverick Brothers, which is the name of his spurs, and cut him up, and they had the big X on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who took his place on that one? Was it the Warrior?
Yeah, that was when Warrior got the big push and got the big win over Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah.
But y'all don't care if you hate the Ultimate Warrior. That was an awesome moment. You hear that music, and then he...
Everyone hates the Ultimate Warrior now, but back then, on that day, everybody was marking out for the Ultimate Warrior. Even Mr. Cynical here, Craig, I bet, was marking out like a little kid.
For the Warrior? Oh, yeah. My sophomore year, I went as the Ultimate Warrior for Halloween.
I went as the Ultimate Warrior at the Halloween one year, too.
You went as the Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I had the hair.
I had the hair too.
None of you had the body.
No.
Well, we had the hair and the makeup and the tassels, and that's all we needed.
Well, see, if you tied the tassels really tight around your bicep, it actually made it look bigger. Because it kind of sucked the fat in on both sides. Yeah.
But the Ultimate Warrior, all the malign, all the fucking people make fun of him. The Ultimate Warrior was the coolest dude in pro wrestling for a couple of years, and anyone who says they never liked the Ultimate Warrior, in my opinion, is totally full of shit.
Okay.
Just my opinion. But anyway, go ahead, Craig. Pick another match.
1993. It was the Hart family with Shawn Michaels and his Knights. Remember this?
It was originally supposed to be Jerry Lawler, but he got into a little legal trouble involving an underage girl.
Yeah, and Shawn Michaels was the last...
Wait, hold on, real quick, I'm sorry. Real quick, that wasn't the cat. This was another little girl, too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I trashed that little girl.
She wasn't more than 16, 17.
The way they,
that's what I'm saying.
It was some girl. I don't remember how old she was. Maybe she's like 13 or 14 or something like that. And apparently she was trying to make her boyfriend jealous or something. She said, "Well, I've been sleeping with Jerry Lawler and the Wrestlers, down in Memphis." And so the boyfriend goes to the police because, she's obviously underage, and that's kind of where that came from and why he got, indicted for that. And I think it all got cleared up or something. And
yeah.
It got cleared up.
With witness tampering because he tried to talk to the family or something, and that's all that happened. I don't know if it was actually an incident. I think people actually believe it was. I'm pretty sure he fucked her. I don't know. I'm just telling you what all the news reports I've seen say.
He likes the young girls,
Anyway, it was Shawn Michaels, and he had these knights, and there was a red knight, a blue knight, and a black knight.
It was Barry Horowitz, Jeff Gaylord making his only WWE pay-per-view appearance ever, and
Greg Valentine? And originally, Terry Funk was supposed to be a knight, but he found out he was going to do the job, and he left Boston.
And he would have been under a hood, and it wouldn't have ever mattered.
Yeah, I'd have been, if I was Terry Funk, I'd been, unless they were going to unmask me to, you know, like do some kind of an angle, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, who cares? It's a paycheck.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, Jim Daniel Neidhart, when he was getting a push, was also cool, you know, doing jobs. So, I mean.
This is a Survivor Series that had some really good stuff and some stuff that, well, it made you embarrassed to be a wrestling fan, like the Four Doinks, who
I
were the Bushwhackers and Men on a Mission with they defeated the Head Shrinkers, Bastion Booger, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Luna Vachon. Oh, no, Luna Vachon was with Bam Bam, sorry.
Although I am kind of disgusted that they beat Bam Bam Bigelow with some of those guys.
And that's my other phone ringing. I apologize. Also on this show was the Smoky Mountain Wrestling Champions Tag Team Championship defended. The Heavenly Bodies beat the Rock and Roll Express on WWE TV.
That was a weird match.
That was a great match. Nobody cared, but it was a great match.
I don't know where the Smoky Mountain Champions in Boston defending the titles.
Yeah, well, that probably could have been that too.
And I think this was the last. This was the last major show in the Boston Garden. I think they tore it down not long afterwards.
It's crazy.
Oh, I know. I can't even think of the match. I remember a moment that I marked out for us in the Survivor Series, and that was when I got to see one of my hometown growing up heroes, the Cowboy Scott Casey. While he wasn't even titled the Cowboy, he was just Scott Casey. But there was one Survivor Series where somebody got injured and Scott Casey got to take their place, and it was awesome seeing him on the WWE pay-per-view.
Yeah, he was on the Ultimate Warriors team, I think. No, it wasn't Ultimate Warriors. It was he was on, I think, Hacksaw Duggan's team or something.
Yeah, I don't remember. I just remember Scott Casey got to be in the Survivor Series, and that's all that matters.
Now, with the Four Doinks, I think it should be said that in 1990, we got the debut of the Gobbledygooker. Just thought I'd throw it out there, but wrong place, wrong time.
Well, you say that at the time, wrong place, wrong time, but when you look back at it, that's one of the most remembered moments in the history of pro wrestling. So, in the end, was it really a failure?
Yes.
Hector Guerrero dancing in a turkey outfit is not a failure. It is epic. It is an epic moment.
The Gobbledygooker.
And Mean Gene dancing, too. That's the this is one of the greatest segments in the history of WWE TV.
I'll take your word for it.
When Reynolds came up with the idea
for... They took that goddamn egg everywhere. Like, wherever they had a show, there went the egg.
Yeah.
When R.D. Reynolds came up with the idea for WrestleCrap, I guarantee you this first thing he thought of. This was probably the original WrestleCrap moment.
I think it is. I think it's the first, I think the picture of the Gobbledygooker, you see it whenever you go to WrestleCrap. But
it's the Gobbledygooker, and then it's the fucking Shockmaster or something.
We need to get that guy on the show.
Shockmaster or Gobbledygooker?
No, R.D. Reynolds.
Oh, we had him on the show. We had him on the show. It was awesome.
Oh,
we can get
him
again then.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to throw out another match from 1989. I thought this was a good match. It was the Ultimate Warriors against the Heenan family. You had the Ultimate Warrior, Jim Neidhart, and the Rockers defeated Andre the Giant, Haku, Arn Anderson, and Bobby Heenan had to substitute for Tully Blanchard in this match because he totally got popped for cocaine. And
oops.
Which pissed me off.
That was his career, basically.
Yeah, and it pissed me off because they were headed back to WCW. We would have got the Steiners against Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, but instead I got Steiners versus Arn and Ole Anderson. But so that sucked. And so Bobby Heenan, he took his place in the match. It's actually a pretty decent match. I mean, you know, they did some good Bobby Heenan ended up pinning Marty Jannetty. Like when Haku kicked Jannetty in the back of the head, and I just remember in the first 27 seconds of the match, Ultimate Warrior hit the ring, clothesline Andre. Andre did the big teeter-totter spot right over the top rope and got counted out
in
27 seconds. And
what the hell was Jim Neidhart doing on that team?
Well, you remember they had, like, during, like in the very late 80s, they had, like, at certain times they'd split Brett and Jim up. You know, like, Brett was doing, like, the house show feud with Mr. Perfect or something like that. And they still do tag team matches every once in a while. But I think they wanted to test Brett for, like, in singles or something like that. And so they did that several times. And this is actually say what?
No, go ahead. I just had something else. Keep
on
that
train. Oh, I was going to say, Shawn Michaels and Arn Anderson are probably the, I mean, they were the MVPs of this match. And the best part was, like, at the end, Warrior finally pins Heenan, and then they're showing all the replays and stuff, and Bobby Heenan's just holding his neck, and he's just walking back to the dressing room, and Ultimate Warrior's ready to go back, and he's all pumped up, so he just does a big running clothesline, and he's heading back to the dressing room, knocks poor Bobby Heenan down.
This was the year they decided to give the teams names.
Mm-hmm.
So they had all the 4-on-4 Survivor Series, and Dusty Rhodes' team was, of course, the Dream Team, and the Big Boss Man's team was the Enforcers. Then you had King's Court versus the 4x4s. Jim Duggan, Bret Hart, Ronnie Garvin, and Hercules. You had the Hulkamaniacs and the Million Dollar Team. You had the Rude Brood, of course, Rick Rude, and Rowdy's. Roddy's Rowdies, excuse me.
This is when I knew there was no, that wrestling wasn't real because he teamed with Jimmy Snuka.
Right. that's funny stuff. Let's see. How about running down here? The night they had the first Elimination Chamber match. Where is it? 2009. Sorry.
2002.
Yeah, that's what I meant. 2002. There we go. Triple H versus Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho versus Kane versus Rob Van Dam versus Booker T for the Elimination Chamber. This is the one
where
Shawn Michaels.
This is where Van Dam almost killed Triple H.
Yeah, he hit a frog splash off the top of the chamber and landed right on Triple H's neck with one of his knees, as I remember. And it also was the debut of Shawn Michaels' horrible brown pants.
That almost killed his comeback for me. That was hideous. I don't know if you got, like, they got one of the Shawn Michaels DVDs. They got, like, an extra with Chris Jericho and Triple H talking about what
the
he wore. It's like brown pants. And that was hideous. He just looked so stupid. Please, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
He's a good worker. He's one of the few that could maybe get past something like that. So, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He got away with wearing like the great smuggling shorts or something when he refereed one time. So,
yeah, that's true.
They also wore chaps all the time.
This was a very good match. I enjoyed this. This was a good, a good innovative match.
Yeah, they were still doing juice at the time. And there was a lot of juice in the match. Shawn, they totally protected Kane in this match. He took the Sweet Chin Music, a Pedigree, and then a Lion Salt from Chris Jericho to be eliminated. And then Michaels hit Jericho and Triple H both with a super kick to win the title. And him and his brown pants celebrated as confetti fell from the sky.
Yeah, that was in Madison Square Garden, too. So.
Yep. Yeah, that was a great match.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, anything with Shawn Michaels is awesome.
Well, yeah. I miss him.
Me too.
I really miss him.
Yeah, me too.
I'll throw out another one. 1992, WWE champion Bret Hart beat Intercontinental Champion Shawn Michaels in 26 minutes and 40 seconds with the Sharpshooter. I thought this was like, I thought this was probably their best match that they had together.
Yeah.
Really, yeah, the only really ones of note are like really the Iron Man match in Montreal aside from this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Iron Man match was good, but I mean, it wasn't like great or anything, and then Montreal really wasn't a match. So, yeah, this is their best match.
Yeah, second from the top on this one, we had a coffin match with the Undertaker and the newly footless Kamala. And Yokozuna defeating Virgil. That must have been a barn burner. Nasty Boys and the Natural Disasters defeated Money, Inc., which consisted of Ted DiBiase, Irwin R. Scheister, and the Beverly Brothers, Jake, Bo, and Blake. Remember those guys?
The Minnesota Wrecking Crew, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good match.
The perfect team, Randy Savage and Kurt Hennig against Ric Flair and Razor Ramon. They did that whole thing on Primetime Wrestling like the week before when they were trying to get Savage wanted Perfect as his partner because, Warrior got fired for being on steroids or something. And they did this whole thing throughout the show with Bobby Heenan begging Kurt Hennig not to be on this team. And finally he slapped Kurt Hennig and then Kurt Hennig poured a pitcher of water over his head. He said, "Here you go, Savage. Here's a wet weasel."
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I didn't care much for this event because it was the first one. Didn't have a lot of the elimination stuff on it, so not much to this show.
Yeah, I thought it kind of sucked when they went away from it. I mean, because that's what made the Survivor Series unique was the 10 man matches.
Yeah.
And
it's really
easy
to book. I mean, you just throw a bunch of guys. It's easy to book. You just throw a bunch of guys, on teams. I mean, it's not hard.
Yeah.
They can give you an out if you want to save something for, like, another pay-per-view instead of,
Yeah. Well, there's actually one guy I wanted us to talk about, and I actually had totally forgot about this since he brought it up. But do you remember a few years where they actually did the thing where they had the Survivors match? The Survivors, I don't know what it was called, but they had the winners go and have a final match.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty
good. Really?
Cool. Yeah, it was in 1990, and I think it was, on the babyface side, the only people that survived in those matches was Tito Santana, Hogan, and Ultimate Warrior. And on the other side, you had Ted DiBiase, Rick Martel, Power and Glory, and the Warlord. Yeah, 5-3.
1990.
Cool concept, I thought.
Cool. I'm surprised they actually didn't think about that and do it over like the years before.
That's actually something they should bring back. That sounds intriguing.
I thought they got to see Tito Santana in a pay-per-view main event.
Yeah. Tito, one of the best workers in the company, who was always in the opening matches, having to put over the Warlord or somebody like that.
He was one of those guys. He was always there. He was there forever.
Yeah. But I could have done without seeing the Matador. God, that costume was ugly. That was the gayest looking
Bobby
thing I ever
called
seen.
His blind forearm called it El Paso the Saucer or something like that.
I think you might have been at this one. Nope, this is a different one. Let's see, 1996 Survivor Series, the main event was Shawn Michaels losing to Psycho Sid. He also had the awesome match with Bret Hart and Steve Austin. Probably.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was like when Stone Cold was first becoming Stone Cold and really getting into the character and just...
Yep.
It was an awesome match, and I remember he refused, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he, like, he refused to let go of the million-dollar dream, and Bret just, like, climbed the turnbuckles and, like, flipped himself over and got the pin because Austin wouldn't let go.
Yeah, they did the Bret Hart Roddy Piper finish from WrestleMania 8.
Yeah. The one where Brett gigged and wasn't supposed to.
I remember
on WrestleMania.
On this show, like they were in the Madison Square Garden, they totally turned on Shawn Michaels. When Kieran said, Shawn Michaels was getting booed out of the building.
Also, there was, second on top, Undertaker defeating Mankind. I'm sure that was awesome. And how's this for a team? The Godwins were teaming up with Doug Furness and Phil LaFon. Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum work-wise.
I think this was their debut, Doug Furness and Phil LaFon.
They were in there with it was those two teams versus Owen, British Bulldog, Jannetty, and Leaf Cassidy, of course, who is our favorite, Al Snow.
Yes.
I just remember that we got to see some awesome matches with Furness and LaFon against Owen and the Bulldog. I mean, those matches were just...
Yeah.
The best matches on the shows by far. It wasn't even close. They were awesome.
They just didn't have the personality to be in WWF.
You know, they were in ECW.
They started saying they were boring. That didn't help them because they were like super over, but it wasn't like they would. I mean, they did okay, but then when they said they were boring, then they really flopped.
Yeah.
Doug Furness had a match with Rob Van Dam in ECW. This was before Van Dam was. You know, well, Rob Van Dam. But, God, that guy was so good. Both those guys were just amazing. And ECW knew how to, Paul Heyman knew how to book those guys, and that was a problem.
Yeah, I remember, I think they did the mystery partner tag deal, and that's where Rob Van Dam and Sabu first teamed up, and they had, a 30-minute draw with those guys in the ECW arena. It was an awesome match.
Amazing. Yeah, I remember that. Yep, that team was totally wasted in WWE.
Well, not really. Like I say, we got to see a few good matches of them and Brett Nolan, so at least we got something out of it.
Yeah, but they could have been a lot more, let's be honest.
I always liked those burners. I like watching him wrestle. He's kind of like a Steiner brother. You know,
he was just a freak because he had the biggest thighs out of anybody in pro wrestling. They were like so... They did not fit his normal body size. I mean he was a jacked up dude, not like super, super jacked up, but a muscular dude. But then he had these fucking, I don't even know how big they were, but he looked like he could jump over a freaking truck or something.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Awesome dropkick, too, for a guy that big.
Yeah, very agile. He's doing huge leapfrogs and stuff like that. I enjoyed watching him.
He kind of reminded me of Kerry Von Erich a little bit. Just the way
body
he kind
was,
of
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, the best place to see those guys is All Japan. You know, their stuff from All Japan is just ridiculous.
I remember they were, this was in the old TWA era. I'm sure you guys remember reading the aftermath when they're having all those bloody shows in Philadelphia before ECW.
Yeah.
The joke. Good Heart shows, with Eddie Gilbert and Cactus Jack and people like that.
Yep.
And they had just signed, for one show they had signed, they had, Buddy Rogers coming out of retirement to face Buddy Landell for, the TWA title, and they were also going to put on their Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy against Doug Furness and Dan Crawford. It was going to be another match. Then the promoter skipped down with all the money, so it never happened.
I've only seen a little bit of them in Japan where they didn't have the most of their success, but I have a videotape of a match with Rob Van Dam in Japan against Phil LaFon, and Phil LaFon beats the living fuck out of Rob Van Dam. I mean, he was stiffing him left and right. He beat the living hell out of him.
Yeah, that's All Japan for you.
Yeah.
I'll throw out another match real quick. This is from 2009, and this was during the aborted push of Kofi Kingston when he was feuding with Randy Orton, and they had Kofi, Mark Henry, MVP, R-Truth, and Christian beat Orton, Ted DiBiase, Cody Rhodes, William Regal, and CM Punk in an elimination match. I put this match up here because I just love the finish. He does a rolling cradle on Punk. and gets the three count. And Norton immediately steps in and gets hit with the what is it, a Trouble in Paradise kick. Pins Orton. And, yeah, shame they didn't go further with him. I hate all those stop-start pushes that they do. It's irritating.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, because he was over for a couple weeks, and they made sure that didn't last very long.
And he's still one of the best performers
they have.
You
know, Triple H doesn't like the black people. He killed that push, I bet you.
God. Oh, gosh.
Mark Henry is the world champion.
It's only because he's bigger than Triple H, and Triple H is afraid of him. That's why.
Was this the show with what year was that, Katrina? I'm sorry.
2009.
Yeah, that was the main event was John Cena defeating Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and we also had second from the top Batista defeating Rey Mysterio. I remember that match.
Yeah,
so
I just remember in that three. The best thing about that three way was right at the beginning, and you know, Shawn and Hunter are together as DX, and then you know they're standing there sizing each other up and looking at Cena, and then all of a sudden Shawn hits Hunter with a super kick and knocks him outside. I thought that was a pretty cool spot.
Yeah. Let's see. How about 2004? 2004, the main event was Team Orton. Orton, Benoit, Jericho, and Maven defeating Triple H. Triple H, Edge, Batista, Snitsky. And,
Batista?
Yeah, Batista. But the fourth match from the top, Undertaker and Heidenreich had a match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this is when Paul Heyman was managing Heidenreich. Didn't he
right.
Him?
Yes, he did.
Oh, this was the year when he was feuding, Undertaker was feuding with Paul Heyman. Remember when he murdered Paul Bearer with the cement in the box of cement?
Uh-huh. Right.
Terrible.
Yeah.
How about the WWF versus WCW Survivor Series match?
The Invasion. Let me check that. You guys talk. I will do some quick research.
Yeah, this was a great match. It's it was a team alliance with Shane, Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, and
you're doing so good. 2001, we had Team WWF versus Team Alliance, and the team was The Rock, Chris Jericho, Undertaker, Kane and The Big Show versus Steve Austin, Rob Van Dam, Kurt Angle, Booker T, and Shane O'Mac.
How the hell do you forget Steve Austin of all the people in this match?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, they got him.
This was fucking awesome. This was such an awesome match.
Even the most knowledgeable people fuck up sometimes.
We also got, again, fourth from the top, the Dudley Boys defeating the Hardys. No, it was Greensboro, North Carolina. Never mind. So the Hardys were in their, it was a steel cage match. That's right.
Oh, that match was so stupid. It was escape the cage, and Matt Hardy had finally gotten out. And so Devon was, like, laying on a table or something, and so Jeff Hardy has a chance to get out. So he's standing right there on top of the cage, and this dumb shit, he just turns around and does a senton off the top of the cage instead of leaving the cage to win the match. That's it.
Right.
Against Team Alliance, didn't Kane actually beat Kurt with the fucking ankle lock?
Give me just a second. I'll let you know.
Not sure. I think Kane was out long before Kurt Angle was out.
Well, I remember him putting the ankle lock on him. I do remember that.
Kurt Angle got submitted by The Rock with a sharpshooter.
Okay.
Chris Jericho was eliminated by Steve Austin. Steve Austin eliminated by The Rock after a rock bottom on top of the title belt.
Yeah, that was when Kurt Angle, you remember that month before they had, he had turned and was with the Alliance, and but it was like, it was, he was like a spy, you know, basically sent by Vince to join the Alliance, mm-hmm. And so he turned on him at the end. Yeah, I remember this because the next day was when Paul Heyman came back, and or either Jerry Lawler came back and Ric Flair made his debut.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
This is when we got the great vignettes with Steve Austin and Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle wearing a tiny cowboy hat and playing a guitar.
Good thing. Yeah. You make that corn, and I don't care.
That's right. good stuff. Well, we got about 15 minutes left. Maybe we should run down this year's Survivor Series.
Okay, because I'm through with my list.
I've been through with my list for a long time.
One quick moment I really enjoyed was when Scott Steiner debuted at Madison Square Garden in 2002.
Okay.
You guys, you don't remember this? I think it was Matt Hardy and Chris Nowinski were like doing a promo in the ring, and all of a sudden you hear the sirens and the holler if you hear me, and he comes out. He got a huge fucking pop.
Yeah, he was over like a motherfucker for a couple of weeks until they decided they had to have a 20-minute match. He must have thought he was like his dad was black or something.
Jeez. Okay, so if you've been living under a rock or you haven't watched Raw for the last few weeks, and let's be honest, who has? Sunday is the Survivor Series, and it's from Madison Square Garden. The WWE Divas Championship will be contested in a Lumberjill match, Beth Phoenix versus Eve Torres.
I will be fixing a sandwich during this match.
Because you're gay. That's why. That's going to be an awesome match.
The WWE U.S. Championship will be decided when Dolph Ziggler will face Zack Ryder.
No, he'll face John Morrison.
No, it says Zack Ryder right here on my screen.
I'm telling you it's John Morrison.
Okay, well, scratch that.
Where are you looking your stuff up from?
This is the email you sent me.
Oh, well. Let me take this real quick. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Okay, John Morrison.
Okay, I believe you. It makes most sense. I mean, apparently the email campaign on Twitter did not work for Zack Ryder or whatever, but that's fine. It'll be a better match.
Zack Ryder is not Zack Ryder because
Morrison was the promise to break up with Medina or something.
If I got to hear about Zack Ryder again or his fucking show, that's worse than that Twitter bullshit on Monday. I'm tired of hearing about Zack Ryder. Everybody get over it. He's not going to be pushed.
I am so sick of the Twitter stuff. When they started the little thing at the bottom of the left-hand side of the screen, you know, this is trending right now. You know, boots to asses is trending right now. I was so sick of that by the end of the night. It's ridiculous.
You know, made me turn on The Rock because he was doing that Twitter bullshit.
I got what he was doing like at the beginning, you know, this is trending. He was really making fun of, you know, the whole thing. And it's so ridiculous. I think we should, you know, start up a write-up campaign and tell them how stupid it is.
Of course, we'd have to put
it on Twitter.
Like the graphics on TV, I don't care about that. But when Michael Cole's beating it in my head in every segment.
Right.
It was like when Russo went to WCW and they had those three-hour shows and, like, every segment had the fucking filthy animals in it doing some sort of bullshit. And it made me hate all those guys.
Yeah.
You know, they'll figure it out when in a couple weeks that all the crowds start chanting, "Fuck you, Twitter," or "Twitter sucks."
Yeah,
I don't. Well, being a WWF crowd, I don't know it'd be that much. You know,
it'll happen. They were already starting to do it this past week.
Aren't they in Philly like in like 2 weeks or something? If it's going to happen, it'll be a Philadelphia crowd for sure.
Well, if they're there, they might not. The audience might not hear Twitter references. Because it might be just mostly Michael Cole talking about him, so.
Yeah, but if they keep pushing it the way they've been pushing it, they're going to be watching the show till then, and they're going to know that they're going to be pushing it. And plus, if they're going to show that little shit on the box or whatever.
Well, no, they're
not
going to be on Twitter unless they're saying something they can hear about Twitter.
No, they'll be
prepared.
These are assholes just by in nature, you know what I mean? They'll figure out a way to fuck it up.
Oh, goodness. And then we've got our first 5-on-5 traditional Survivor Series elimination match. We've got Team Orton, which, of course, is Randy Orton, Sheamus, Mason Ryan, Kofi Kingston, and Sin Cara versus Team Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Jack Swagger, of course, Barrett. What's his first name?
Wade.
Thank you. Wade, Hunico, and, again, working twice on a pay-per-view because he's that good. Dolph Ziggler.
It seems like they want something more for Ziggler. His second show in a row, he's worked twice.
Yeah. And I have no problem with him working twice because I enjoy watching this guy work. He is really good.
I'd say he's, as far as in the company now, I'd say probably, I know, in the top 10 of the best workers that they have right now.
Easily.
Probably even a little higher than that.
Yeah, he's so good. Love
and clearly
love
he
that
thought
guy.
The thing was he looked stupid in the singlet because it ain't come back yet.
We got the WWE Championship. We got Alberto Del Rio versus CM Punk. Wouldn't be surprised if there's a title change.
I think Raw is going back to Chicago before the next pay-per-view.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
In December sometime, they're going back to Chicago, so I can see CM Punk winning. He needs to. He's getting his ass kicked all the time. So.
Right. We also got the WWE World Heavyweight title, a rematch of the big man, Mark Henry versus Big Show.
That should be awesome.
Looking match on the show I'm looking forward to, aside from the main event.
Those guys,
last month, so.
Yeah, they bumped like crazy for each other. That was such a good match. It really was. I mean, for two big dudes, they went nuts on each other.
The question I have regarding Mark Henry is, okay, Mark Henry right now is probably the most awesome thing on the show. I mean, just he's fucking awesome. But the thing is, Is it just because this time they pushed him right, or did he just finally get it after all these years?
They're pushing him right, and plus he's had some great performances in all these matches.
Yeah, and he's not sleeping with his sister or Mae Young.
Or the transvestite.
Right. Yeah, it's his push. It's totally his push.
Yeah, but they tried pushing them before, and it never, ever came close to working. If that's the first time they tried pushing them as a big, strong monster, I mean, they've done it 3 or 4 times. In fact, I thought this one was going to fail at first, but to me, I think if he woke up one day and he just figured it out.
He flipped out after they played that rib on him where he had to go out to the ring, but there was no dark match. He probably scared the shit out of everybody in the back, so we're going to give him a good push.
Remember the last time they tried to push him as a monster and they referred to him as the Silverback?
Ooh. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why
Triple H, he's a racist.
Yeah. That's good one, guys. Way to think about that. And, of course, in the main event, we have Miz and R-Truth versus The Rock and John Cena.
I would put Miz and Truth over in this match. Some kind of chicanery with Rock and Cena.
I think it should be
Rock,
a miscue.
I don't think it should be. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it should be a miscue between Cena and Rock. Miscommunication, something like that. And you know what? Why don't you just pin the Rock and get it over with?
I wouldn't pin The Rock just because it's his first match in 7 years, and his next match is going to be WrestleMania. So I don't know that I would, because I'm thinking John Cena's probably going to win the Mania match, so let Cena take the ball here. So
if that's the way they're going to go, if they are going to have Cena win the Mania match, then by all means, then Cena should be pinned in this one. But
what they're going to do is they're going to have The Rock, like Cena's going to have the match won, and The Rock's going to hit the rock bottom, and Cena's going to lose. What they should do is they should have Cena fuck The Rock and cause him to lose, because everyone's going to hate Cena as it is. Go ahead and give him a little more of an edge. Go ahead and make it to where, you know, everyone, I don't want to say make him go full-fledged heel, but have him be an ass when it comes to The Rock. And then
he'll
get even more heat come WrestleMania.
Yeah, he could totally play tweener for, you know, for 4 months or so. Until,
and if it's just with The Rock, you know, I mean, if it's just with The Rock, it can work.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But there's no reason why Miz and Truth cannot win this match. They were jobbed the last 2 weeks. They have no heat on them coming into this. If you go by, you know, what they usually book, you know, they have the people that are going to win at the pay-per-view always lose the week before, so it makes sense that they should go over. So I hope they do.
That's where you're screwing yourself over, Craig.
I know. I know. I'm thinking too much. I know. I'm just saying that's the way it should be.
You got to think like a pea brain, like Brian, and you know, then you might be able to figure it out right.
Well, the thing about Miz and Truth is, you know, they say in the hell they've been made to look like geeks and not like a real threat during the build-up, which that's true, but nobody's buying the show to see them get beat up. They're buying it to see The Rock wrestle.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't have built them up as a threat, but really in the end, I don't think that matters that much. The whole thing is Rock being in the wrestling ring. It doesn't matter who he's against.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to the show, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, me too.
I actually am. Yeah,
I'm actually missing work, and I'm going to be enjoying the show.
Well, I'll be watching the show, but before that, I have to go help out my little buddy up in Bothell because he doesn't know how to hang pictures.
He doesn't know how to hang pictures?
You don't know how to hang pictures?
Yeah. He doesn't know how to hang pictures.
You put a nail and you put like a string and then you just make it so it's straight. What's the fucking game, dude? Like I said, he's a fucking pea brain.
I love the guy, but he doesn't know how to read a tape measure and doesn't know how to use a hammer, apparently. So I'll be taking care of that for him because he needs me to decorate before his family comes over for Thanksgiving next week. And if I'm lying, I'm dying.
I was mad last night when, Brian and Vinny, when they were doing that bingo stuff, they just missed such, you know how with somebody, like if you watch TV or something like that, somebody says something and there's an obvious joke there to follow up on it?
Right. Missed the joke.
when they were asking the questions, and the question was, what does Granny collect?
Dust.
That's it.
Dust.
How can nobody say it?
That pissed
me off.
My first thought was she collects figure four weeklies.
Oh, dust. Throw out the plug then.
She does. And I wonder, you got the memory? What kind of car did Granny have?
I don't know. That doesn't have anything to do with wrestling, so I don't remember it.
Model T.
It was a Cadillac, so I win.
There's the choke. Throw out the plug then.
Actually, Katrina took the trip for 2 hours, so we actually have a lot longer if we really want to, Craig, but I'll go ahead and do the plug just for you. Everybody check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com with a whole lot of other shows. And, so check out AngryMarks.com. Yeah, you actually timed that pretty perfect because we got like 18 seconds before we actually would have hit 90 minutes.
Well, that's what the producer does for the show.
So, Ed, are we doing something Sunday?
Yeah, we're probably, unless something comes up, we can do a little post-show right after Survivor Series. So I'm sure Craig will be busy hanging pictures at Brian's wall to call in. But me and Couture will be at least for an hour, maybe, and we'll be reviewing the Survivor Series.
Yep, cool. Should be fun.
Yeah, it'll be cool. And so before we leave here, Craig, you got anything you want to talk about?
No, I got to go find my tape measure and my hammer. That's about it.
My God, Katrina, you got anything you want to talk about?
Do you ever wonder what it's like to die?
Sometimes.
I'm serious. I'm sure everybody's thought about this. I mean, like, if you're dead, do you feel anything?
Of course not.
I mean, it's like, are you, like, in a... Because you would imagine that if you're dead, you still exist in some form, you know, to where you're, you know what you're doing.
If you're going to imagine you're dead, that means you're probably imagining yourself at your own funeral.
Hmm.
I was just wondering,
right,
that like when you die, through the, like, if you still feel something, I mean, just like when you're asleep, then you always be able to feel something. I mean, like in a dream state for like forever,
right,
when you die or something. That's what I'm thinking.
Last Christmas, my wife got me the Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx, and it's a really cool book. It's like a diary, and you know, there's dates and what he did on this date, whatever. But it he recounts the time where he OD'd on heroin, and they rushed him to the hospital, and he could hear the flat line on the on the monitor, on the heart monitor. It flatlined, and he said he physically felt his body floating, but he was looking down at his own body as he was floating up. And that's when they hit the paddles, and immediately he jumped from hovering above to back into the body. Pretty trippy stuff. It's a great book, though, Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx.
See, I don't understand why people have to die. I mean, who thought up this system? Once you get old, you die, and it's over with, you're done.
Sure.
I don't get it. I guess it's a population thing, you know.
I'm
okay
with dying. Maybe
people want to control the population.
I'm ready to go. I'm good. So.
Well, I'm not ready to go.
Well, no, but, like, both of my grandparents that I have left. I lost both my grandmothers last year, and like I just saw my grandfather about a half hour before we started this show, and he's in so much pain that it's like, man, I kind of wish he wouldn't hurt anymore. And my other grandfather has Alzheimer's, and he's got, you know, infections all through his body, and they're talking about amputating his foot and all this stuff, and I'm like, just let him go. Just let him go.
You know, Michael Landon had, like, one of the best quotes. You remember when he got diagnosed with cancer or something, they gave him, like, too much to live or something like that. He said, no, I don't have much time left, but, you know, I had a pretty good run here. I didn't miss a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he was all set in his ways. Sorry to go on a down note.
Yeah, let's, Ed, say something to pick us back up.
Well, I was going to say is, how is it that women are able to engage someone in an argument over text for over 2 hours? It happened to me today, and it just blew my mind that.
An argument over what?
Whose phone is that?
Whose phone's what?
It, never mind. You'll hear it later if you don't. I have a theory that most women are petty and they need to win an argument, so that's why they keep arguing.
I guess,
well,
but I mean, I can see a long argument in person, but by fucking text.
Oh, yes,
and I did get my ass kicked in this argument. I just,
well, she's fighting with a half-wit. Come on.
Oh, come on.
So this was. This was Ed fighting with somebody on using text. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I was going to say, if it was a woman fighting with a woman, I said, all women hate each other. Y'all know it.
Yeah.
So
I totally agree.
All women despise each other. Not like us men. We don't care.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're not petty like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Of course, we are the dominant species, so, you know.
Just barely.
The dominant
yeah.
species?
Dominant gender or something.
Well,
as
like
human
that.
Beings, we are the dominant species.
It's very
so,
you
know, animals would
like
be running
today.
Kids.
Anyway,
too bad
go ahead and
the animals
the
didn't come up with the animals didn't come up with the idea to kill all the humans first instead of the humans deciding they're going to kill all the animals. You know, things could be different.
Yeah, but I'm sure it wasn't the guy's idea. I'm sure it was the lady came in saying that she was fucking hungry and this guy needed to go feed her at.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah, okay, so whatever.
We'll go ahead and end the show with the fact that women are the most dominant species over men. Everybody
sure
come back
are.
Next week, or come back Saturday night after the Survivor Series, and then come back next week, and we will have something to talk about then. So everybody, come back next week.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the matrix shit. Let's go, hook him up! I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out today. The game is off to play. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.